This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Well, hello there, one and all. Welcome to the TriDot Podcast. As endurance athletes who adore our training schedules, nothing can be more annoying than getting a cold. Thankfully, on the show today, we are going to talk about the ins and outs of what to do when you have caught a bug and how to handle your training. We have Dr. Jeff Krebs in the house to provide some insight for getting you back to your training as smoothly and quickly as possible. Dr. Jeffrey Krebs is an internal medicine physician who has been practicing medicine for over 35 years in San Diego. He is a fellow of the American College of Physicians and an associate clinical professor of medicine at the University of California. He is a former competitive figure skater, a 7-time Ironman and multiple half Ironman finisher, an elite age group runner who has raced Boston Marathon 8 times, coming up on 9 and then hitting number 10 in 2025, and will be competing in his 3rd age group World Marathon Championship later this year in Sydney, Australia. He is a TriDot certified pool school instructor and a RunDot coach. Jeff, I am so pleased to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. It's so great to be here discussing this very important topic, especially since there are so many bad bugs out there trying to derail our training and our racing.
To round out the panel with a wealth of experience from his background as a respiratory therapist is TriDot Master Coach and a TriDot Pool School Lead Instructor, Ryan Tibble. Ryan has a BS in Biomedical Sciences from Texas A&M University and Respiratory Care from UT Health Center in San Antonio. He serves as the head power cycle coach at Lifetime Fitness. He is a certified CrossFit coach and a certified pose method run coach. Ryan is a multiple Ironman finisher, has been coaching with TriDot since 2015, and I am grateful that he is my very own coach. He also holds the role of TriDot business coach and plays matchmaker as the Coach Connect advisor for athletes who want the perfect coach for them. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Oh, thanks, Vanessa. Always excited to be here with you. And it's such a pleasure to even talk here with Dr. Jeff Krebs as well. It's exciting to really talk about something so important as what to do when you are sick, and what not to do is even the bigger thing. So thanks again, Vanessa.
And I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. Let's start things off with our warm-up question. We will then move into the main set, and then we'll cool down with our coach cool-down tip. It's going to be a great set, everybody. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
For our warm-up question, we are sticking with the theme for the day. And the question is, what is the one thing that always makes you feel better when you're sick? Let's start with you, Jeff.
Well, fortunately, I rarely get sick, but when I do, all I want to do is sleep. And my favorite thing to do is to lay on the sofa with a nice warm blanket on me and my Labradoodle Walter right next to me. Seriously, his body heat gives me so much comfort.
This is incredible. So one of my favorite things as well is my heated blanket. That's pretty cool. And we have just been put on a wait list for a Labradoodle puppy, and I'm really excited. So I can't believe that you have one, and we're going to have one, and I'm really excited. So yay, that's awesome.
I'll have to show you pictures of Walter later. He is absolutely adorable, and they're really smart, so beware.
Okay, good to know. What about you, Ryan? What is your thing that makes you feel better when you're sick?
Well, yeah, I'm gonna go off script here in such a way that it's gonna blow people's minds. A really good margarita. Oh, no, I am just kidding. So, you know, I live in Texas, right? So, but anyways, you know, really, I go old school here. I actually love a great homemade chicken soup, and when I talk about this, I mean, I put on a big pot, put the green beans, the carrots, the potatoes, the rice, and loads of chicken. So I like to say, in many ways, I feed my sickness. So I want to, again, get that nutrition in. And so that is my big go-to. And I did learn a little something as well about an addition I put to it. And I'm going to let you, Vanessa, elaborate on that here in just a moment. I have a feeling I know what you do.
Yes, you do have a feeling because I may have sent you this recipe at one point in time.
Yes, you did.
So I'm very similar to you, Jeff. I rarely get sick. When my whole family is down and out for the count, I'm usually pretty fine. But when I do get sick, I make a healing tea and I have a pot of it going on the stove all day long. So I have this endless supply. It's made from rooibos. So it has rooibos tea, lemon slices, fresh ginger, fresh turmeric, pepper. And then if I'm feeling like I need a little bit of antibacterial help, I'll put in some of that unpasteurized raw honey. And it tastes amazing. And I always make it for my friends and family when they get sick, and I'll do a little special delivery and bring a huge pot of it over for them, because it's legitimately magical.
I agree. I did do this, and for our listeners out there, I could say, you know what, you could maybe I even add a little bit of whiskey to that too, and just kind of take the edge off. Just saying.
It does sound amazing. I'm going to have to get that recipe from you.
I will send it your way. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's throw this out to the I Am Tried Out Facebook community. Let us know what makes you feel better when you're out for the count. And I think we're going to end up with a pretty good list of things to help us all out the next time we're feeling a little under the weather.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Before we get too deep into the show today, I want to give a shout out to our good friends at UCAN. Here at TriDot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind Live Steady, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that cause a spike and crash, UCAN energy powders, powered by Live Steady, deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. I am so excited to get my shipment of UCAN products. Their energy bars are out of this world. Between their energy mix, energy bars, almond butter, and more, there is definitely a Live Steady product that you will love. So head over to their website, ucan.co, that's UCAN.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 20% on your entire order. It used to be 10%, but the fine folks at UCAN have upped it to 20% off for TRIDOT Nation. So once again, that's UCAN.co, promo code TRIDOT. We have all been there. Excited to smash the next training block or looking forward to an epic race that has been on our calendar for months or even years. And then we wake up with a little tickle in the throat or sometimes even a full-blown cold. I don't know about you, but there's a lot of anxiety, sadness, anger, and all of the feelings that come after the realization of the impending discomfort, forced rest. And that the worst thing ever is having to be forced to rest and then potentially missing that special event. It can be really discouraging. But is there something that we can do to potentially stop ourselves from getting sick in the first place? Or if we do end up with the mother of all colds, what steps can we take to get back to our training and racing that we love? Well, Jeff and Ryan are here to save the day. I'm absolutely sure that they're going to shower us with knowledge and advice and get us on the road to recovery as quickly as possible. So, Jeff, let's jump right in here. Can you tell us what is happening biologically in our bodies when we start to feel sick?
First, I want to distinguish between viral and bacterial illnesses. I think it's important because bacterial illnesses, for the most part, require a doctor's visit and antibiotics, but far and away, the most prevalent of infections and the ones that we really experience the most are viral. So when we talk about the common cold, URIs or upper respiratory tract infections, the flu, all of those things, we're talking about viruses, and there are a lot of them out there. Of course, we all know influenza, RSV, COVID, But there's adenovirus, rhinovirus, and a lot more. What happens is these viruses enter our bodies, our immune systems immediately go to work. Well, hopefully anyway. And oftentimes these viruses then enter our cells. Their main goal is to replicate. So they enter our cells, they start replicating, they get released from cells, they go into our bloodstream, they infect other cells, and it just goes on and on and on. And a lot of what we're feeling is our immune system trying to destroy the virus, and it also affects our normal tissues. So as the immune system revs up, we develop fevers and chills. It raises our core temperature in an effort to fight off the infection. So in this case, the fever is good, even though we don't really like to experience it. And as the viral infections continue, we start getting sore throat, headaches, body aches, nasal congestions, cough, sneezing, watery eyes, most of them related to the effects of the virus, but a lot of the symptoms are related to our own immune systems trying to fight off the virus. And with some viruses, we also get nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. A lot of what we feel is a release from our immune system of a lot of white blood cells in our body, and white blood cells can actually cause inflammation. So that's sort of what biologically is going on.
Right. That was a really excellent synopsis of all of the things that happen. And you've taken very complicated biological processes and made it very simple to understand. So thank you for doing that. I am a firm believer in preventative measures for all things that have to do with health and wellness. So what steps can we take to prevent getting sick in the first place? Ryan, let's start with you.
I love this question, and I wish I could, you know, honestly follow exactly all of the things I talk about, you know, with my athletes in particular. But, you know, it is a, generally speaking, you know, a great diet, a healthy diet can go a long way. But, you know, like, which one do you tag first? Is it the diet? Is it the regular exercise? Is it the sleep? And in my opinion, you just put them all at the top of that list. And you make sure that you prioritize those three things: diet, sleep, exercise, regular exercise. And so, again, those things are all going to help in any sort of preventative measures. And in fact, even potentially healing as well. But wash your hands too. That's another thing that people often forget. You know, washing your hands regularly. Just, you know, don't go to the grocery store, go shopping, and then immediately come in and start eating everything. You know, wash your hands. Do those kinds of things. But let me go back to exercise. There are a ton of benefits from having a regular regimen of cardiovascular and strength training. That does amazing wonders to our immune system. I know I don't have to preach this too much because our audience is primarily athletes, but again, keeping that consistency will benefit your immune system as well. So I also add that the again, regular exercise improves our body's immune system and responses to and defends our system. So a little small caveat. Now, I know a lot of athletes are probably like, well, why am I getting sick after a marathon or a full Ironman or something like that, or in the middle of these training for these big events? And partially that is because some of these longer durations that we do, such as 2-3, well, more like 3-4-5 even hour things, can actually have a slightly opposite effect and make you a little more susceptible. So what you have to do is be more diligent in protecting yourself and eating and sleeping and recovering properly. So, you know, I really, you know, kind of got a slightly deep into the weeds on this, but, you know, those are big preventative measures that can be done, and you can control every single one of those. We'll like to lastly mention that as a respiratory therapist, you know, I can speak directly to those with reactive airway disease and tell them, it's like, listen, stick to your regimen that your doctor's prescribed. That is something for your preventative measures, whether you're using inhalers of different sorts, whether the steroid inhalers or just plain bronchodilator, preventative inhalers, use those, continue to use those. That will also assist you in being able to be more healthy and less susceptible to being getting sick.
Yeah, and Jeff, as a physician, I'm sure that most of your patients are coming in to see you to get advice on how to relieve their symptoms, but do you sometimes get the opportunity to talk to them about prevention? And if so, what do you say to them?
Absolutely. I stress the importance of prevention all the time to my patients. And Ryan, I loved everything you said. I agree 100% with everything. And one of the things, knowing that regular exercise strengthens the immune system, I do advocate all of my patients to exercise regularly. And good hand washing is really important. But going a step further, wiping down the equipment in the gym before using it, not just after, because you can't trust that the people who use the treadmill or the weights before you have done a good job of wiping it down. Also, common sense, just avoid people that you know are sick. Get your appropriate vaccines for influenza, RSV, COVID, whatever is appropriate for your age group. And if you're immunocompromised, get those vaccines that are recommended. And then the other thing that I always do is I still advocate these days to wear a mask in appropriate situations, airports, airplanes until you hit 10,000 feet, certain large groups, you never know who's gonna be sick. And it's better to be the only one in a mask than to get sick and have your training compromised.
Absolutely. I'm very curious about something you just mentioned. So you only have to wear your mask until you get to 10,000 feet?
Yeah, so that is a thing. So airplanes have these very elaborate airflow systems and HEPA filters. They don't kick in until they get up to the cruising altitude. And I'm pretty sure it's about 10,000 feet. And that's because it takes so much energy. They can't invoke these systems early on when they're trying to take off. But once they get to about 10,000 feet, you can be pretty certain that those systems are all engaged. And it is a little bit safer. Now, obviously, if you're sitting next to someone who's hacking away or blowing their nose constantly, I'd be a little bit wary of taking off the mask. But I Right. always wear my mask until I get up to that cruising altitude, and then I feel pretty safe. And with the travel that we all do as athletes going to races, so important. There's nothing worse than flying to a race and the day before the race you start feeling ill.
Absolutely. Okay, you just saved a whole ton of people from hours of wearing masks in the airplane. Thank you so much for that tip. That was absolutely great. So we know that there are measures that we can take in order to prevent illness, which both of you have alluded to very wonderfully. But now, lo and behold, we have come down with something. So Jeff, what are some of the signs and symptoms that it's time to actually consult a doctor as opposed to just riding out the symptoms or taking the cold and flu meds that we have access to from the pharmacy?
Well, prolonged fever or a very high fever is one of the most important things to recognize and then seek medical care. If your temperature's as an adult, I should say, is over 103 degrees, you need to see a physician because it may be more than just a viral infection. Or if you've had a fever continuously for 3 to 4 days, shortness of breath is another one. And Ryan will, I'm sure, speak to this as a respiratory therapist, especially if your oxygen saturation is dropping. The great thing, we as endurance athletes, most of us have Garmin devices or other monitoring devices that actually nowadays can monitor our pulse and our oxygen saturation. And so if you're not feeling well, feeling short of breath, toss on your Garmin, monitor the oxygen saturation. And if it starts dropping into the low 90s, that's probably a good time to start considering seeing a physician for that. Also, persistently elevated pulse. We all know what our resting pulse rate is. And again, our watches and other monitoring devices can monitor that. And if you notice that your resting pulse is persistently elevated, that might be a good time to go see a physician. Certainly, persistent nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, blood in your stool, vomiting blood, a deep cough, especially with dark green, brown, or blood in the sputum, doesn't sound great, but definitely a sign that you might need to see a physician. And then the other thing that I will say is that a lot of us now have these home COVID tests. And when we start getting a little cold or flu symptom, we test. If you're positive, I would definitely contact a physician. And the reason why is that you may be a candidate for some of the antiviral therapy that's out there. And although they're not perfect, they can help mitigate some of the symptoms, and they can also decrease the duration of your symptoms.
As you were mentioning about taking note of your breathing rate, your elevated pulse rate, and I was in Peru with my husband at one point many years ago, and we were walking around Machu Picchu. We had just done a massive hike up to 4,700 meters elevation, and we had come back down to Machu Picchu, and I noticed we were walking up all these stairs, and I was like, why is it so hard for me to breathe on these stairs? And I was like, oh, it just must be the elevation. But then I started counting my respiration rate, and I was like, okay, this is not normal. I'm at 50 breaths a minute. And so I went to our tour guide, and I said to her, I'm like, I think something's wrong. And so she said, well, we'll call the doctor and they'll be waiting for us when we get back down. And sure enough, we got back down to the hotel later on that day. This happened to be my birthday, actually. And the doctor came and he took my oxygen saturation and it was 56. I was like, and then I didn't realize, like, at that time, I didn't know that it should be, super high 90s. And I said to him, I'm like, well, I just ordered dinner. Can I just eat my dinner before we go to the hospital? And he said, sure. And so I ate my dinner. And then when I w and then they took me to the hospital in like this ambulance that wasn't really an ambulance. It was more like a van that was cleared out on the inside. And then I got hooked up to all sorts of things and got to go in the hyperbaric chamber. And it was great. I had high altitude pulmonary edema.
Yeah,
So fun times.
exactly. Yeah.
Well, leading up to Ironman California, I had just moved across the world from Australia back to North America. And the kids had started school a few days after we got back. And needless to say, things were slightly chaotic in our house. So, of course, a couple of weeks later, less than 1 month before the big race, I got COVID. And this was the first time that I had actually exhibited symptoms ever before. So, Ryan, you helped me out big time navigating through this. So, let's dig into it right here. What do you tell your athletes about when and how much to back off the training?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'd say I've had to deal with this on more than one occasions too, even actually for myself. And it, again, let me begin with, regardless of the proximity of a race, a major event, this doesn't change the timeline or how to treat. And I'll go even deeper here. This is a tough one for many to get through their heads to allow the healing process to do its work. As we pr I was as you know we are all mostly type A personalities. I mean, if you're not, you're just lying, first off. We're all type A's. We all like get anxious and we're like, oh my gosh, it's a few weeks, I've got a race. And the hardest thing to do is be patient and let things run their course. But you can do things, as Jeff has mentioned, to help mitigate some of these things and hopefully reduce the duration of those symptoms. Now, in perspective of your race being a few weeks out, there was a bit of solace on my side, in that I expressed to you that, knowing your fitness had been built, you had an enormous amount of fitness built for your Ironman, And what was more important is was to get you healed and recovered, and in turn get you ready for your race. You had, you know, like many athletes, you have invested so much time, blood, sweat, tears, etc., and not to mention the money, that it's like, hey, let me get to the start line. Let's get there. So, you know, COVID has been that most common thing as of, you know, the last several years, obviously, and that's been the biggest one that I've dealt with athletes, and it's still a very finicky beast, in my opinion. As an RT working in the hospital, I observed it affected patients differently, both respiratory-wise and cardiovascularly-wise. The biggest thing was to remain patient through the recovery process, and not to try to push through it. Some of the things that I do with my athletes and coaching them is regularly monitoring their heart rates, especially their resting and especially any activity. And I'll go through that a little bit more in regards to what you should and should not do with what symptoms. As a general rule, this is a good general rule, neck and above, no fever, no body aches, you can exercise. But keep it at a low effort, lower durations, and lower impact. So when I say impact, I'm referring to our disciplines, specifically the swim, the bike, the run. I would opt for not necessarily to be running, but at least maybe bike instead. That's a little bit lighter on the body, you know, especially again from the neck up. You know, I want to make sure I really preface that, no fever, no body aches. You know, or easy swims, do those swim drills. Maybe this is an opportunity to work more on swim drills on dry land, an opportunity to work on run drills on dry land. You know, do those kinds of things. Do some strength training. You can definitely still do that. But again, you don't want to resume higher activity, higher durations until those symptoms do subside. Below the neck, you know, this is that big thing, below the neck, chest congestion, shortness of breath, anything like that, fever, body aches, that does require serious attention to recovery. And then definitely consulting a physician. Again, keep in mind, we're not telling you just listen to our advice, but rather, hey, this is the time you need to go talk to a physician. It's so important. Those muscular body aches, let me talk about that for a quick moment. Those muscular body aches, the ones that you're feeling in the legs, you feel in your arms, you're like, I just can't lift my arms. Guess what? Your heart is a muscle too. It's experiencing the same things. You want to tax your body, you want to try to work out when you're feeling that way, your heart is taking that beating too. And again, that is something you should not ignore. You should not be risking yourself in such a way that you're working out from the when you have illnesses that are affecting you that way. You know, trying to exercise with body aches could lead to some serious, serious health issues, and rest is needed with that fever and body aches. Jeff mentioned earlier about shortness of breath. That is one of those things that can be classified as definitely emergent. You need to go seek physician help. You need to go, whether it's to a clinic, to an ER. If you're short of breath, there's something else going on that you cannot see or understand, and you need professional help at that point.
Oh, that was really great. Thank you for sharing all of that. Jeff, is there anything that you would like to add to what Ryan has said here about putting the training aside and catching up on rest?
Well, Ryan is absolutely right. In all of those points. As endurance athletes, you know, we're trained to monitor our bodies, and we need to use that information to listen and act accordingly. It's hard because we all love training. We all love completing every workout and checking that box every day. But there are definite times when we're going to benefit more with rest than we do from performing a suboptimal workout that doesn't enhance our training at all.
I think you hit the nail right there with that one. Absolutely. Now, this has also got me wondering if there are differences when adjusting training for swim, bike, and run. So, Ryan, you had mentioned maybe swapping in a swim or a bike instead of a run. But do we treat all of these different disciplines the same, or are there differences in how much or maybe the intensity that we engage in for the different sports? Let's go with you first, Jeff.
Well, a lot has to do with what your symptoms are, and I might add what you're taking for your symptoms. A lot of us take medications containing sedating antihistamines, for example, and that's going to affect your reflexes and cognition. I would not swim, bike outside, or run outside under the influence of these medications. It's hard enough when we're riding with all of our faculties to avoid cars and potholes and other obstacles, and taking any type of sedating medication is going to really affect that adversely. The big one, of course, if you're having diarrhea as part of your viral illness, you got to stay out of the pool. And you have to stay out even after your diarrhea resolves. You need to stay out for 10 to 14 days. Many people have the false belief that exercising while you're sick will help your body fight off or kill the virus. And that's just not true, and actually can be very dangerous. Especially if you already have a fever, raising your core temperature even further with exercise can cause tissue damage. In general, the adage that it's okay to keep training if your symptoms are really above the neck, as Ryan mentioned, is fine as long as you don't have a fever. But anything below the neck, you definitely don't want to do it.
Yeah, that's, I think the hardest part is that we know these things as athletes, and then we struggle to actually execute on the resting portion of it, right? Like we always think that, oh, maybe I'll just sweat it out. Like how many times have you heard that one? I'm just going to sweat this cold out. Maybe it'll make me feel better. And then the next day you wake up 10 times worse than what you were the day before. Ryan, what are your thoughts on this?
First off, yeah, Dr. Jeff, I, you know, 100% love the fact that you brought up, don't try to go sweat it out. it's like innately built in many of us, like, oh, I got to go sweat this out. I'm a triathlete. I'm a runner. I got to go do these things. No, you don't. But, you know, my added thoughts to this are, you know, I alluded to this, I mentioned it really, you know, the swim, the hike, and the run, the running does inherently have the highest training stress on the body, the pounding, et cetera. You know, so just adding to that, it's like, I would, you know, as we stated earlier, our stipulations to when and when not to work out is, you know, start with some of the lighter sports, the lighter disciplines. You know, again, going back to, you can do swim drills, you can do running drills, you can bike, you can do strength training. But again, mind you, yes, that is making sure you don't have fever, you don't have body aches. That's, you know, those big ones to really mention. And again, it's not to say you can't go run, but it would not be my first discipline to go to when coming back off of, you know, any sort of illnesses.
That all makes perfect sense, that's for sure. I do think that we have a question here that everyone has been waiting for. What can we do to get back to training faster? Ryan, I know you have some tools for this in the toolkit. So what do you tell your athletes when they want to get back at it?
Start off with, be patient. That is, I mean, seriously, if you're patient, you know, let's say you have an illness, you know, let's say the typical duration of that illness is, say, 7 days. We, if you're patient enough and you listen to your coach or you listen to a professional, you know, physician, you might get back in 5 days. And again, it's amazing if when you do the right things, and most of the time it's not doing things to do the right things. And so the more you try to fight the illness, trying to exercise as normal, the longer it actually will take to heal. Again, I go back to fueling the machine. I call everyone a machine. Fuel the machine, make healthy options, get adequate sleep, do those things. And actually you can, and potentially get back faster, you know, maybe cut off 24 hours, 36 hours to your healing. You know, as viral illnesses go, it has to run its course. That's just it. You can do certain things to reduce symptoms. And you know, as Jeff mentioned, again, potentially getting antiviral medications that will can and reduce, potentially reduce the durations of symptoms, and get back into action sooner. And I always go back, consulting your physician is always great to do instead of using Dr. Google. Dr. Google is not the source. All right. The other considerations are, as Jeff mentioned really earlier on, are the differences viral and bacterial infections. Now, bacterial infections will often require antibiotics, and therefore, while using antibiotics, it is recommended to reduce intensity and durations of exercises or halt them completely to allow your body time to heal. That is so, so important. So, those are some of my tools that I use, and really I just being supportive of my athletes, giving them that communication, letting them, getting them equipped to do the right things.
Yeah, I think that's super important. The first aspect being patience. It's something that we all struggle with, but knowing that if you put in the effort to reduce your training, which does take a lot of effort and consciousness, then you'll be better off and back at it faster than you would if you had just, you know, gone for that extra little zone two, even, you know?
Absolutely.
And Jeff, you absolutely must have had some experience with this considering your vast training and racing and professional experience. So do you have any secrets to share?
Well, definitely getting rest early on, as you've heard, will allow you to reap the benefits later on and get you back to training sooner. We have to understand that when we're sick, our bodies are using important resources to get us better. At the same time, our appetites often decrease, so our caloric intake decreases. So our body needs every bit of the resources that we can give it to do its best to fight the infection. You know, Ryan mentioned in the warm-up question that his favorite thing to do when he's sick is have a big pot of chicken soup. And that's really the right way to go about it, because he's supplying hydration and good nutrition to really help our bodies. The other thing to remember, because people just, they don't want to take time off from training. Remember that if you're training regularly, taking a week off will probably lead to a little loss of endurance, especially the older you are, but you'll regain that within 7 to 14 days of returning to training on average. And so rest assured that taking the time now is not going to set you back very far, and you'll regain that within 1 to 2 weeks.
That is,
I love what he just said.
Yeah.
He said, rest assured. He should have said pun intended on that right there.
Yeah, I didn't catch that one. That was good. Yeah. But I think what both of you have said is that we all know, especially with TriDot, that we intentionally do the right training right. And I think that it's important when we get sick, we have to do the right resting and recovery right. You know, like we have to make sure that we make that a priority so that the body can repair itself and get back to that training as quickly as possible. Now, the time has come when we've got through the worst symptoms and we're actually ready to get back into that training program. So what I'm wondering is if there is a but here. So if athletes like to attend spin class, go to the gym, hit the pools, is there a specific amount of time that we need to wait if we are training with others in order to avoid infecting our training pals? Jeff, I know you had spoken about this, about the pool and not going back after having the viral diarrhea for 10 to 14 days. What are some other suggestions that you have?
Well, you know, the answer to your broad question is really not that straightforward. Many people want to get back to their training as soon as their fevers break. And what you need to know is that in these viral illnesses, oftentimes fevers can be cyclical. So you may break a fever for now, but it's going to return. And so you don't want to be too hasty returning to the training. And it's also dependent, of course, on what illness you have. For example, influenza may take 7 to 10 days to run its course. So you're looking at 7 to 10 days of really taking it easy. other more minor viral illnesses, you'll feel better within a couple days and you can go back sooner. As we heard, COVID's still prevalent. If you test positive, you need to stop training for at least 7 days or until all the symptoms have resolved. And this also means, in the case of COVID, that you have to monitor your heart rate. We don't really talk about that with other viral illnesses, but as Ryan was saying, that COVID can definitely affect the heart muscle, and we need to be careful with that. Many illnesses are contagious, so be mindful when returning to a public gym, especially if you still have a runny nose or a cough. If at all possible, resume your training at home first. And as mentioned before, definitely stay out of the pool for 10 to 14 days after having diarrhea. And that's not from the time the diarrhea starts. That's after it has resolved, because there still can be transmission of bacteria and especially parasites.
Yuck.
Nobody wants that.
Oh my gosh. It just blows my mind that like people, obviously a lot of people probably aren't that courteous, and so to think that when you're, swimming in the pool and you're just wondering what else is floating around in there. Man, gross. So finally, the big A race is on the horizon. And I think that it's 100% normal for an athlete to feel nervous about a whole ton of things. But one of those extra anxieties that a lot of people feel is about getting sick before that big race. So, what can we do about this, Ryan? Let's start with you.
Absolutely. There's a lot of things we can do. First, I do like my athletes to go ahead and go on Amazon, purchase a giant bubble, and live in it until race day. And if any of y'all bought that, I have some oceanfront property in Arizona as well to sell you. But to this day, not a single one of my athletes have purchased this said bubble, so I'm not sure how well it works. But seriously, you've invested a lot of time, money, blood, sweat, tears. In this major event, doing your part in prevention can go a long way. So again, we go back to proper rest, proper recovery, eating well, hydration, washing your hands, taking your vitamins, doing those things, avoiding places like concerts, a week or 2 weeks before your race. Like, hey, try not to schedule that concert. Try not to schedule that family reunion, things like that. That seems to be the commonplace for a lot of things. Avoid crowded places. I know it's like, well, wow, I want to do these things, but think about the investment in time that you've done. And it's something that, we do as athletes. We have to be very conscious of that. Avoid being around other sick people, and just having that way just gives you a lot more peace of mind, avoiding getting sick before that big A race. Again, we love what we do. And as a coach, I'm in it for my athletes. I'd like, just please take care of yourself, guys. It is the best prevention is going to be the best thing for you in the first place.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, Jeff, you've had a ton of racing experience. Have you ever had these kinds of feelings before a big race? And if you did, what did you do to get through it?
Before every single race,
Yeah.
I'm always concerned that I'm going to get sick before race, and I start several weeks out making sure my nutrition is on point and that I'm getting plenty of rest. Staying away from situations like Ryan mentioned, very important. But remember, we're going to races and we have to go pick up our credentials at the race expo. And for example, some of the marathons I go to, we're talking about tens of thousands of people in an enclosed space. So it is hard to completely avoid those environments. So I'm okay wearing an N95 mask during that time, and I always do without fail. I'm okay if I'm the only one in the entire group, because I know it's for me, and I don't really care what anyone else thinks. I will give you a little true story. I raced the Chicago Marathon this last October, and of course I show up at the expo. I'm one of the very few people wearing an N95 mask. I picked up my credentials at the expo. I didn't stick around too much. I called an Uber to take me back to the hotel, and I get into the Uber, and the driver is hacking away this very fruity, productive cough the entire time.
Oh, no.
And just nonstop, and it sounded horrible. I immediately rolled down the window, tightened my N95 mask on, and within about a mile and a half or so, I asked her to pull over so I could get out. Fortunately, 2 days later, I show up to the start line. I felt great and had a good race. And I do think that the mask saved me because those germs were just flying all over the place. So yeah, I worry about it, and I just try to be sensible. And you know, when we're racing, we're always talking about race your own race. And for me, that goes with the prep before the race also. I don't really care what other people are doing. I have to do what I need to do to be confident that I'm going to show up in a healthy state.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Well, it is my pleasure to bring you the cool down today, everybody. Chris Navin is here for our coach cool down tip. He is a metabolic specialist and endurance coach who opened his very own human performance lab. So to say that he has a wealth of knowledge is a massive understatement. The most impressive part is that his actions speak louder than his words. He has completed over 400 endurance events with podiums and age group rankings that will knock your socks off. Chris considers himself to be a Swiss Army knife kind of coach who uses metabolic testing in addition to focusing on the technique side of swim, bike, run. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So I was doing my warm-up today for my run, and I was navigating the Lego city that has overtaken my basement because my kids are nuts about Lego. And I heard that this might be the case for you as well. So tell us about the massive build that you did in Tokyo.
Yeah, so growing up as a kid, I played with Legos a lot. I grew up in Switzerland and
oh, yeah.
Had the toys there, and then came back to the U.S. as well. And then as I was growing up, my father was actually involved in working with Lego as a company.
Wow.
He got a grant from them to develop it was a Brooklyn College in New York, using it as like an educational tool and whatnot. And so we ended up getting, by going to conferences, we built computer-controlled Legos. And it was when they first started adding like the motors and things like that. And they had an interface, it was called Lego Dacta, to connect it to a computer. And so we built a display, and the Japanese Ministry on was it Trade and Technology was at a conference, and they saw it and they're like, can you build this but bigger? And so they actually gave us a grant, commissioned us to come to Tokyo. We were there for about a month. So I built this huge, they wanted it to be a future city. And so I built this as a, you know, essentially a teenager, I think. I forget exactly how old I was at the time. We went over there for almost a month. We set it up in this big, right near the baseball stadium, actually. It was inside their offices. And it was on display there for a year.
Wow.
As a computer-controlled exhibit of the future of technology and Legos.
That is incredible. And when I tell my kids about this, they're going to be so excited and thinking that their dad does not have as cool of a job as your dad had. That's for sure. So I am really pumped about the tip that you have for us today, because I think it's going to make a huge difference for our listeners. So what do you have for us today?
Yeah, so it's a real simple one, but it can be applied in a couple of different ways. And oftentimes when people get into training smarter and they get a heart rate monitor, you know, they focus a lot on like being in the right zone, and they focus a lot on the beats per minute. But if you just look at your heart rate in terms of beats per minute, it doesn't correlate to a lot. Like if I'm at 132 beats and you're at 147, it's hard to understand what does that really mean? What does that feel like? So I encourage people, and pretty much all my athletes, to change the data field on their Garmin or their bike computer to not just look at beats per minute, but look at it as a percentage of your max heart rate. Sometimes people do percentage of your lactate threshold, but max heart rate is the easiest and most common. And that way, when you're looking at your heart rate and you see like 132 beats, you'll also see it as a percentage, you know, 60%, 70%. And if I tell somebody, hey, go at a 90% effort, you know what that feels like, roughly. And so you can start to correlate the beats per minute into an actual rate of perceived exertion. It's also helpful if you're ever training with a friend or whatnot, or as a coach working with an athlete, you know, knowing where somebody is. You know, if you just look at their heart rate, you might not know that 127 beats is zone two for somebody, and it's not comparable from one athlete to the other. So in terms of coaching groups, or if you go to like a group spin class where they have heart rate on the screen, we try to do it as a percentage. So everyone knows, you know, what effort you're going at. And it just gets you connected more with understanding the data and the why behind using the heart rate data. So you can correlate it to a rate of perceived exertion. And that will correlate to understanding how your metabolism changes in the different zones. But oftentimes, too, the other issue I notice with a lot of people is if you're using TriDot, for example, and you have a Garmin watch, your heart rate zones might be set up differently in both of those. And so in order to get your heart rate zones in sync, it's good to figure out like what should your max heart rate be? And I like to call it your metabolic max heart rate. It doesn't have to be your true max heart rate, but just a way to correlate the zones between systems, making sure that the heart rate settings on both systems are in sync. Because honestly, like that's what Garmin uses for all their training stress calculations. And, you know, you want your zones to be as accurate as possible. So I really encourage people to get that dialed in, you know, use a good heart rate monitor, ideally a chest strap too, if you can. And that way you can really learn how to use heart rate data a little bit more intelligently.
So you had mentioned RPE, which is rate of perceived effort. And I know that people are actually pretty accurate at knowing their RPE and how it correlates to the different zones. Do you find that the RPE correlates well to the percentage of your max heart rate?
It should. But it all depends on if your heart rate zones are set properly, like doing your assessments, you know, consistently in the right way and using a good device to measure your heart rate. So if someone is really getting into, you know, being more precise, really using the data, you want good data coming in so that you can use the data. So, you know, oftentimes an optical, you know, wrist-based heart rate monitor, as good as they are, they don't work as good across every individual type. Like someone who has thicker arms, different color skin, you've got more bone around the wrist, things like that can affect the accuracy. So a big part of it is making sure you either use a chest strap or the upper armband opticals are usually a little bit better to have that good data going in. And then once you have that, it will correlate very, very closely to rate of perceived exertion. And so when you put it in a percentage standpoint, that's how athletes, especially beginners, can really understand heart rate better. Like sometimes people say, why is the app or device telling me I need to be at 132 beats? That feels too easy or something like that. And once they see it as a percentage, then they begin to understand, okay, I know I need to be in this zone, you know, be in the 60% for zone two, the 70% for zone three, the 80% for zone four, generally speaking. And that way they just understand heart rate data better. It kind of makes that connection. Once you've established that connection, it's a lot easier to focus. You don't have to be like, oh, I need to be at 142 or 147. You can focus on a percentage scale, which just makes more sense, especially if you're racing. You know, your mind is distracted with a lot of things going on, and sometimes looking down and seeing like 132, 137, like it doesn't make that rate of perceived exertion connection very quickly. But if you see a percentage, you're like, oh shoot, I'm at 92% of my max heart rate. Yeah, maybe I'm going a little bit too hard. And so I find it helps to get athletes to focus a little bit more with more precision.
Yeah. I have one last question for you. How do you determine your max heart rate? I'm not sure if the 220 minus your age is still the standard or the go-to for that. So what do you suggest in that department?
Yeah, do your assessments, you know, use Run.Dot, TriDot, do a field test essentially. One of the best field tests to do is a 5K run. And if you really pace a 5K well, like you really give it your best effort, like sign up for a race and get competitive people around you. And you know, generally to truly assess someone's max heart rate, the only consistent way is to really get someone to go for 15 minutes or more above their anaerobic threshold, and then add on a ramp at the end, like a stressor at the end. And usually with a 5K race, you come down that finish chute and you see the finish line. That's enough of a stressor to get you, and you might actually hit your true max heart rate at the end of a 5K. But at least getting the data where you see your average heart rate for that amount of time is what, you know, our systems like RunDot and TriDot will use to get your heart rate zones dialed in properly. I am more biased. Like I'll want people doing a metabolic test, you know, so I have a lot of lab equipment where we can really do some more high precision stuff. But for the general purpose person, just doing a field test, you know, doing your assessments is really the key. And you can learn a lot from that too. Like oftentimes people are still, you know, a little confused about heart rate. You might see the average heart rate going higher or lower. But if you look over time, over a long period of time, and you notice, hey, I'm able to hold a higher heart rate for a longer period of time, that actually usually correlates to improvements in performance. It means your thresholds are moving up. It means you're fueling better. It means you're hydrating better. You're becoming just a smarter athlete. And you'll be able to notice those improvements in your metabolism and your health just by looking at the heart rate.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.